If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I'm your host, James Coker, along with Luke Francis. Hi, Luke.
Hi, James. How you doing?
How are things going at the Racing Pilot this week?
Racing Pilot? Well, I mean, we've had an interesting race week of various things going on. So a few headlines here or there, a few good little storylines to focus on, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Today, we are going to be reviewing the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, the street race, which just happened in Baku this weekend. But before we do that, let's get into some F1 headlines. First up, Christian Horner is officially out of Red Bull with a big pay package.
He is. It's an eye-watering figure, the kind that makes you kind of, I don't know, cry yourself to sleep at night. Sat anywhere else but in his Christian Horner's position. He's getting paid reportedly $100 million by Red Bull to essentially sever his current deal. It was meant to go until about 2030 was the original plan, but obviously it's been cut short, about 5 years short. So he's had pretty good negotiations on his side to get in a pretty nice severance fee, and I'm sure he'll be sailing into the distance for the next few months and enjoying that pay package. But I think the question for F1 fans is, what's next for Horner?
Right.
Is he looking at other teams? Is he looking at other sports, possibly? What is next? I think everyone can agree he's certainly not finished with the sport. I think he's the kind of figure that will always come back. Maybe a slightly unfair description, but he's a bit of a cockroach in Formula One. You know, he'll never die, really.
I think that people like him and Toto Wolff are the type of people where it past a certain threshold, it's no longer about the money. Like, they just love the purpose, the professional purpose that they have working in the sport, and will probably continue to do so until they physically and mentally no longer can.
100%. And you've seen it in the past with the likes of Ron Dennis, the likes of Flavio Briatore, obviously still in the sport now. There's this sort of element where they simply can't give up. They need to be a part of it. And yeah, as you say, it's that purpose, that relevance that drives them on. And I think it's the exact same with Horner.
I think it's also why, like, a lot of former drivers and team principals, like, decide to go into broadcasting. Like, sometimes it's about money, but also it's like people want to continue to be a part of the show in any way they can.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's always a tricky one if you're an athlete, especially. I mean, Horner, despite his modeling history, I don't think we can quite call him a flourishing driver.
He did drive in the lower formulas, and then there's that story where he was being interviewed and his teammate was way quicker than him, and he realized he would never be able to match it. And that's when he decided to switch over to being on the administration side and started running a lower formula team that was it Art?
I Arden. Believe? Yeah.
Arden. Thank you. Arden. Yeah. And it was through those circles that he met Helmut Marko. And then Helmut Marko was responsible for bringing him into Red Bull when Red Bull purchased the team from Jaguar.
Correct.
If I'm remembering this correctly.
And so
looking at, like, the pay package that Christian Horner got, you know, he deserved to be fired. The scandal that was happening the way it did, he should have been fired when that happened a year and a half ago. We all know that. He then got fired for either performance or had something to do with trying to retain Max. It was kind of too little too late, but he shouldn't be at Red Bull anymore. It was bad PR for Red Bull, the team. It was just better for both parties to have a clean break and kind of move on from this situation. And it's a big pay package. I don't know if he deserves $100 million, but he did help build that team from the ground up, essentially. So he is responsible for Red Bull's success, him and Helmut Marko. You know, six constructors titles, I believe, number of World Drivers Championships, four with Vettel, four with Max, or three with Max, four with Max.
Four with Vettel, four with Max.
Like, he is a very good team principal, and he would bring a lot of value to another team on the grid. I think a lot of teams probably just don't want the bad press that comes along with working with someone with his sort of like tainted public image right now.
Yeah, definitely. I think we saw in those final stages of his time at Red Bull, it was almost like everyone around him was trying to leave. Obviously, Newey jumped ship.
Jonathan Wheatley.
So many different people in the leadership positions decided to leave the team. And I think it is that element. I think his time at Red Bull ran its course, but I don't think that means he's finished with any other team. You know, what he did so well with Red Bull was build it from the ground up. Of course, they then maintained very good performance throughout the years, but he was very good at bringing a team back to the top. So whether it's an Alpine possibly with Briatore or a Aston Martin with Lawrence Stroll, I think there are opportunities for him in F1, possibly not at one of the big teams. I think they're pretty set in stone around their leadership structure and who they want in charge. But it's possibly one of the smaller teams that maybe want to throw the dice a bit and see what happens.
I feel like Alpine is probably a very good fit for Christian Horner. He and Flavio Briatore seem to be like cut from the same cloth.
And, for sure.
In a way. And like both of them are sort of seen in the public eye as more unfavorable figures in the sport. So like putting them on the same team in the same organization kind of makes sense. I'm curious about him maybe moving to Aston Martin. Like, how much of Adrian Newey's move to Aston Martin was about money and how much and a challenge and how much was it about getting away from Christian Horner? Like, I'm curious as to what Christian and Adrian Newey's relationship is like at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure there's many factors at play. Of course, Aston Martin have deep pockets, so they can pay Newey what he wants. Then I'm sure they could pay Horner what he wants. But of course, there may be those underlying relationship problems between Newey and Horner that may get in the way of that. It could be that Newey has a clause in his contract to say he doesn't want to work with certain people. I think fundamentally, in Stroll's eyes, being Lawrence Stroll, I would say that Newey is more valuable than Horner, firstly. I think the way that Newey can instantaneously change a team, especially in a regulation cycle coming up, I think he has the pulling power. But that's not to say that it was a different reason that Newey left and they actually have a pretty good relationship. It's hard to say for sure. But I think, yeah, it's definitely on the cards for Aston Martin. And as you say, I think him and Flavio put the piranha in Piranha Club when you're talking about Formula One. So they'd be two peas in a pod.
Yeah, agreed. Anything else we want to talk about F1 headlines before we get into this race review?
I think we should dive into the race, take apart what happened. I don't think there's been too much to note in the day or two since the Grand Prix. So yeah, let's dive into the headlines.
Before we do that, I want to talk quickly about, this is slightly political, but I want to talk about tariffs. I want to talk about the tariffs in the United States that have been implemented by the current presidential administration. I, as an F1 fan, have just been hit with a tariff for a piece of Formula One merch that I ordered.
Really?
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah, so I got the Charles Leclerc Monaco hat. That's like the seersucker hat. You know, it's like the white and blue stripe one.
Yeah.
Beautiful hat from Puma. And I already got it, which is what I'm confused about. But then I just got a bill from FedEx. The hat was not cheap. It was like $80 or something. The hat was not cheap. And I just got a bill from FedEx saying that I owe back tariffs on this hat to the tune of like $36. That's almost 50% the cost of the hat.
Wow. Yeah, that's worrying. That's very worrying. Not sure what happens there. I mean,
so if you're a motorsport fan,
political point.
Yeah, if you're a motorsport fan and you're ordering merch, like, be careful where you're ordering it from, because you might get slapped with a huge tariff.
Definitely.
Don't buy expensive memorabilia right now that's like autographed. Don't buy it from Europe.
Probably right. Go to Temu or something. Get your merch from there.
But I'm saying, if you bought a piece of memorabilia that was like a signed memorabilia, whether it be like a helmet or something like that, and you ordered it and it's from a European vendor, and let's say you paid $5,000 for it, you could get hit with like a $2,000 tariff right now. If crazy. I'm just like doing the math based on the cost of that and what I got charged, that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess if you wait however long it would be, three, four years until hopefully those tariffs are gone, then I'm sure the value may be similar, so you won't lose out too much. So no, keep that in mind, guys.
All right, let's talk about Baku. Storylines. As we all know, we had an absolutely crazy qualifying. It was the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, the cruise by the Caspian Sea, an absolutely chaotic quali. We had multiple red flags. We had six red flags in total, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was insane. I think the craziest stat for me is that the duration of this year's qualifying was longer than last year's race.
Yeah.
It was that chaotic. There were so many red flags, so many crashes, six in total. Of course, Piastri crashing out in spectacular circumstances. Leclerc doing another Baku slip up, which I wouldn't call it a trademark of his. That's harsh, but it's definitely something that he can't seem to get around is the tight corners of Baku. Mm-hmm. But after all, across all the crashes, all the red flags, the wet conditions, Max was dominant and completely just sailed through, showed up exactly what he's about and why he is champion material and why he's pushing his nose back into this championship fight. Of course, I think it's a long shot, but I think it's just testament to him and his consistency to be able to be there time and time again.
Yeah, how many points is he behind Piastri? 69?
Correct, yeah, 69.
Nice. So before we get into it, the race yesterday, Max Verstappen, P1, George Russell, P2, Carlos Sainz, P3. But the quali, of course, was crazy, partially because like Baku is a challenging circuit, but also there was light rain. Wasn't enough rain to justify putting on inters or full wets. But it was a little slick on some parts of the street.
Yes, it was. And it caught out quite a few people and completely changed the face of the qualifying entirely. As we saw, it was very close for Sainz to be on pole, for example. It was just at the end where Max pits in by about half a second with an incredible lap. I know we'll get into the race, but I think this weekend was decided on that qualifying. Of course, Piastri in the wall decided that starting grid position of ninth. Lando just not putting it together enough on that final run in Q3, put him seventh. And arguably, you know, if Lando qualified second or third or even on pole, that points gap to Piastri with what we know happened in the race, it would be a completely open championship. So yeah. I do think qualifying almost decided the race. But of course, there were certain elements within the race itself that we'll get into, which changed the face of the weekend itself.
Yeah, if Lando could have secured pole and won the race, he would have had a 25-point swing on Oscar, which would have been absolutely huge. Instead, he only got five for finishing P7, I believe.
I think it was 6-point swing, from what I remember. I think six points. He's still got a points gap on Piastri. I think it's 24 points in total or 25 points between the two. So he's closed the gap for sure, but you can't help but think it's a missed opportunity for Lando this weekend, you know, being presented with what happened, the most uncharacteristic weekend for Oscar Piastri, arguably we've ever seen. He was 34 races in a row in the points. Obviously crashed in practice, crashed in qualifying, and then had a nightmare start at the start of the Grand Prix, jumped the start, sadly causing Alonso to also jump the start, which was unfortunate. Yeah. And then a few corners later, Piastri was in the wall purely out of his own own sort of error. So it was a completely uncharacteristic weekend for Piastri, and one where I think if we look back at the championship, possibly with Piastri as champion, it's those moments where Lando had to pull through, had to swing those points back and prove that he's able to challenge in a championship, when I just don't think we've seen it quite yet, that sort of fire or ability to just switch on and get the point swing done.
So, Sentry's sponsoring the show. I'm a comedian, not a developer. I write jokes, not code, but the developers who listen keep telling us it's the thing you use when you don't want to spend all night debugging nasty software issues in production. Let me explain it in F1 terms. Sentry, that's S-E-N-T-R-Y, is to developers what a good race engineer is to a driver. It tells you what went wrong, when, and how to fix it before things really go sideways. It's basically the telemetry system for your app. Instead of brake temps and tire wear, it's telling your, hey, line 143 just spun out and crashed into the wall. Wow, that's a good analogy. It's used by millions of developers, including some of the biggest apps like Disney Plus, Duolingo, and even the Mercedes-AMG F1 team. And Sentry recently launched a new AI agent, Seer, which can automatically generate root causes with over 94% accuracy. Basically, Sentry is your pit wall, your race engineer, and your tire whisperer all rolled into one. And instead of yelling Plan C in your ear, it just quietly shows you the bug and how to fix it. And I love that. So if you don't want your code DNFing every weekend, go to sentry.io or click the link in the show notes.
It was definitely a surprise result for McLaren, especially in quali with Norris qualifying P7, Piastri qualifying P9. Even though quali was very long, I thought it was very exciting at the same time. Max on pole, Carlos Sainz holding provisional pole for a long time until Max put in a better time towards the end. Liam Lawson with a very surprising P3. But yeah, that race start when Piastri jumped the line and then stalled, and then almost immediately bended into the wall, it just was like very uncharacteristic for him.
It was really odd. It was really odd. I think we've seen, Piastri is arguably the most level-headed driver on the grid. We've seen it all year, his ability to just, be above the pressure and kind of soak it all in and just perform. Mm-hmm. It seemed like everything was going wrong for him. And I think you can kind of see the way he was acting once he crashed out. He was almost just like, I'm ready to get this weekend done. I'm ready to move on to Singapore. Just forget this happened, because that's not me. It's not what he does. I did quite like how once he had crashed out, that he was seen chilling by the side of the track at turn 5, watching what I assume is on a marshal's phone. I thought that's one of those pictures that you'll remember from the season and from those moments. But yeah, I think all in all, an incredible missed opportunity for Lando. Of course, he closed the points gap, and it's now 25 points with however many races remaining. I think it's 6 now remaining. So there's all opportunities to still close it and still get a championship fight going. But, 25 points, it could have been 10. It could have been 15. And then it is fully championship on. And so it's a shame to see for F1 fans, obviously for Lando. But we move on to Singapore and see what happens. I know Lando's been very strong in Singapore in the past. So who knows? Maybe we'll see a bigger swing from maybe a Lando P1, Oscar P2. But you've then got Max now in play, who seems to be back on top, like back in vintage 2023, just dominating from lights to flag.
For sure. It was a pretty solid weekend for Red Bull across the board. It was a good quali for Yuki Tsunoda. You had Max on pole. Max, of course, winning the race. Yuki Tsunoda finishing P6. And, I felt like Max Verstappen kind of has that joy back that we've been missing from the race. Because, for so long, he was winning so much that it's kind of like the law of diminishing returns. And so if you're just winning race after race after race, each one gives you a little bit less joy. And then when that result is taken away from you and you're sort of back into maybe trying to fight into podium, maybe sort of finishing P4, P5 or whatnot, to be able to pull off back-to-back wins the way he has and been so impressive in qualifying, it's nice to see the joy come back for Max Verstappen.
Yeah, definitely. I think you can just see he's doing what he did in 23, but just so relaxed. He knows he's got the car under him. I know with Monza and with Baku, it's fairly similar setup with the thin rear wing. So I don't know if he maybe knows this car will, let's say, perform in Singapore or perform in Interlagos, but he clearly has a better car under him, which is going to keep going and keep probably challenging the McLarens and being a factor in the championship, whether that is pushing himself in contention or getting in the way of the other two. We'll definitely see what happens there.
What was very funny to me at the end of the race, when the drivers were going to meet their teams before going to the cool down room, you saw Carlos Sainz elation, like running and jumping into the Williams team. You saw Max do the same exact thing where he runs to Red Bull and jumps into the team where they all grabbed him. And then George Russell just sort of like casually walked up. He's like, "Hello guys, how are you?" And they're like, "Hi, good job." It was just like a very different energy. And I know he was sick all weekend, so that probably attributed to some of it, but it was just very funny to see.
Yeah, it was odd. I mean, I don't think I've seen Sainz so animated. I mean, the speed he sprang towards his teammates was incredible. And yeah, Max almost fell over the barrier when he jumped on his teams. And then Russell, or it was like his Mercedes colleagues almost were like, "Don't get us ill. You stay away from us. I don't want to be ill." And they just shook some hands or did some fist pumps. It was like COVID was back. Yeah, it was very odd.
Yeah. I want to go back to McLaren for a second, because while Norris did finish P7, partially that result had to do with a very slow stop that he had at like lap 38. It ended up being like a 4.1 second stop, I believe. And because of that, he was projected, I think, to pull out of the pits in like P4 or P5, but instead he got caught in a DRS train. And there are just so few opportunities to pass on that Baku street circuit. He wasn't able to make up the positions in the remainder of the race.
Yeah, it was very unfortunate. I think Lando must be absolutely fuming with his team. Of course, there's things he could have done better this weekend. But
sure.
Over the past, I mean, I think I saw a stat saying across six weekends this season, he's lost about 12.5 seconds in pit stops. If you look at a classic, maybe 2.5 second average pit stop time, he's lost 12.5 seconds in total on race distance. Of course, this one was when it mattered. I think when he came out, he was maybe 1.8 behind that important fourth place or fifth place to be ahead of that train, which was, I think, Lawson. But he came out because of that 2 seconds behind. And yeah, just couldn't make ground up. And I know he said about struggling to get past Sonoda. Obviously, Lawson doing incredibly to keep that position as well. Yeah. So it was very unfortunate. I think it's definitely a weekend for McLaren to forget on all accounts, whether it be Piastri jumping the start, crashing, Lando not putting it together in qualifying, and then the team not delivering in the pit stops. It's one of those where you've seen a team so dominant and everything crumbles so easily. I don't know if you remember 2019 Germany, when it was raining, Mercedes had their limited edition car, it was all looking great, Mercedes was sailing to the championship, and then they botched Bottas's pit stop, they botched Hamilton's pit stop, they didn't put the tires on correct, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And it was one of those weird races in a dominant season where things just fall apart. So definitely a weekend to forget for McLaren, and definitely one for Lando personally to look back on with sort of a what if mentality. But I guess being a sportsman, you can't quite think that way, and you need to just look ahead, right?
100%. Let's talk about Carlos Sainz on the podium. Carlos Sainz made it. So let me backtrack. With the exception of Lewis Hamilton's sprint win in China, Carlos Sainz made it onto the podium in a Williams before Lewis Hamilton made it onto the podium in a Ferrari.
It's so sad. It's so sad, especially as a Lewis fan myself, by heart. It's very sad to see. I think, if you want to quickly touch on Lewis and Ferrari, something's just really not right. In qualifying, it seemed like he was possibly being ignored by his radio engineer. It seemed like they were talking over each other. Communication just seems all over the place. Lewis is a bit of, he's kind of at a dead end, really, of where to go and how to jump back from this. Obviously, the performance of the Ferrari isn't good enough anyway to deliver race wins on a consistent basis or even podiums. But of course, there is something with himself and how he's gelling with the team, how he's getting the setup in those practice sessions to make sure you can put together a strong weekend. It's just not coming together at all. But yeah, it is for signs, at least this weekend. I think we've seen, I would argue Carlos has had the most unlucky season of anyone this year. Mm-hmm. Only 16 points before Baku from the whole season. No points scoring finishes since Canada as well. I think whether it was his own fault, which there's definitely been occasions. Obviously, we were talking last episode about the Dutch Grand Prix and the collision with Lawson. There's certain elements where he's been unlucky in decisions, but also elements where maybe he could have avoided certain situations. But all in all, to see him jump on the podium again and just have a solid weekend. He's qualified well at some races. It's then fallen apart in the race, or he's qualified really badly and so the whole race is ruined. It's been great to just see him have a solid weekend, great quali, great race, and jumping on the podium. And you can see in the way he reacted that it meant so much to him. I mean, he said himself it was the best podium of his career, better than his first ever podium. It was very special.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will say that I recently reposted this to my Instagram story. I made a video in May of 2024 when the Carlos Sainz to Williams rumors started. And so many fans online were freaking out about this, being like, this is terrible. Like, I feel so bad for Carlos Sainz. This is unjust. I hate this. And I was like, pump the brakes, everybody. Pun intended. Pump the brakes. This is not a bad move for him. And like went through like why his options are so limited. And of course, that all started with Lewis deciding to go to Ferrari, and it created this domino effect of the musical chairs that we often see on the F1 grid when silly season comes around. And his real options were Audi or Williams. And his choice was either to go to a team that was essentially starting fresh, even though they're inheriting the team from Sauber, or go to a team like Williams, where James Vowles is already sort of putting the steps in place for them to get closer to becoming a competitive team again. And I was like, I said something to the effect, it was like, there's very possible in a few years they're going to be competing for wins and maybe up there at the top. We never know. And I can't say I'm right because he got one podium in Baku, but this is progress. And we've mentioned before, it's the first podium that Williams has had since 2021 in Belgium, but that was really not a race. That was like was like a rainy weekend, and they really only raced behind a safety car for a couple laps, and then it was over, right?
Pretty much. So half points as well.
Yeah. So this is huge, huge progress for Williams.
Yeah, definitely. I think looking at his decision to go for Williams, I mean, firstly, I was quite surprised he wasn't getting offers from some of the larger teams. Obviously, Mercedes, I mean, they were pushing for Antonelli anyway, but I was surprised that didn't fall through. And then, of course, Red Bull, I was quite shocked he wasn't considered for that seat, given his pedigree and his ability to be at the front of the grid. But, you can only do what you're dealt with. And I think looking back now, if you were to pick, with what we know this season, if you were to pick Williams or Audi for the next few years, I think everyone can agree you would pick Williams. Sauber have had a pretty solid season, don't get me wrong. Obviously, a podium with Hülkenberg and various points finishes. But I think when you're looking at the longer-term play, the leadership, I think James Vowles is an outstanding team principal. And he's just got everything going in the right direction. Everyone knows exactly what they need to do. They've got that long-term view as well, knowing that don't worry about this year. We'll look at next year. You know, 2026 is the focus. I'm not saying that they're going to win races in 2026 or be at the front of the grid, but they've got that kind of longer term view that maybe some teams are struggling to implement as much as Williams. So I definitely think it's the right choice for him in terms of the choices he was given.
For sure.
I just think he just needs to hook it up a bit more. Obviously Albon has, I mean, arguably wiped the floor with him this year in terms of points, at least. And I'm sure not a lot of people saw it coming. Albon is, of course, an outstanding driver, and we knew he wouldn't kind of concede to Sainz too easily. But I think Carlos just needs to, get hooked up a bit more race by race, get some consistency in, and then I'm sure he'll be fighting at the front in no time.
Alex Albon's had an absolutely phenomenal season, and the points that he's accumulated this year, he should, if you compare that to what he's done the rest of his career time at Williams, he should be very, very happy. He's sitting eighth in the standings, in the driver standings currently, with 70 points in a Williams, which is, you know, for lack of a better term, inferior machinery to the top four teams. Like, he should feel really good where he is right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think what he's been amazing at is consistency. Mm-hmm. I mean, just looking at the standings, Hadjar is on 39 points behind Albon. And Hadjar has, as we've seen, had amazing points finishes, a podium, amazing moments, whereas Albon has kind of just consistently got points every weekend and not really fussed too much. He's not blown people out of the water, but he's just consistently there, and that's exactly what you want with a Formula One driver.
I will also say I absolutely loved Carlos Sainz's radio after the race. You really felt the love that he had for the team and just how much this podium meant to him. I also loved that the DJ was playing like a dance remix of Smooth Operator for the entire track. And then Carlos Sainz also got very philosophical in his post-race interview. He said, sometimes you need some bad moments to get you to a good one. And isn't that life in a nutshell?
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. We need more of those moments.
I know, right? What are we talking next? Let's talk Mercedes, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. I think fundamentally, very solid weekend for them. Mm-hmm. Russell, firstly, was outstanding in the way that he pulled himself together with his illness. I mean, missed FP1, firstly. I mean, I know through the radio he was sounding incredibly ill. And so to be able to deliver that well in the race, just be so solid. You know, he didn't seem to be involved in too much angst with any driver at the start. I know Antonelli kind of pipped him off a little bit and there was a bit of contact there, but from that moment on, I mean, he was just so solid for a guy that was so ill.
When I saw that at the beginning of the race, I was like, get him some treats, because Kimi Antonelli got that dog in him. It's probably it's probably an Italian greyhound, but watching him go to wheel to wheel with Russell at the beginning of the race and edging him out, and then having a great pass on Liam Lawson, like, it was a great race for Kimi Antonelli. I mean, even though he ended up, Russell ended up eventually passing him and finishing P2 on the podium. But Antonelli with a P4, solid, again, another solid drive for George Russell. P2, despite being sick all weekend. Also, like, again, Ash and I had talked about this all the time this season. The way George Russell has been this season, because he ends up being kind of like on an island between the race leader and the rest of the pack, you never see George Russell on the broadcast.
Yeah, no, it's weird. He seems to kind of sail in his own space, and he's, I think that's what you think when you think consistency, is just a driver that is always P4 or always P5, race and race again. And then sometimes when those opportunities come up, when other drivers have crashed out, for example, mm-hmm. Piastri or Norris maybe struggling back down the field, those are the moments where that consistency pays off, and what normally is a P4 or a P5, that then turns into a P2 quite easily when those drivers aren't in the picture anymore. And so, yeah, it was a fantastic weekend for him. And then, with Kimi, I know we spoke last weekend about how Toto was quite critical of Kimi after Monza, which sort of almost changing his tune on Kimi and maybe trying to give him that hard love. And I guess it worked. I mean, P4 for Kimi was very, very impressive. And as you say, quite quite a ballsy move into turn one, and really sending the message that he's not just a kind of rookie number two that can be walked over.
100%. Let's talk about Ferrari. Another rough weekend.
Another one. Yeah, it's just sad, I think. I mean, I know there were moments in quali, obviously in one of the practice sessions, you know, Hamilton topped, and it was almost like a Ferrari back. Are they in the running for this weekend? And then qualifying, obviously Hamilton only P12. I know he was incredibly surprised almost at that performance. He felt like they were possibly in the shout for pole. I know he said in the post-quali interviews, and I think it's that same element where he's just not able to get a rhythm through for the weekend. He's not able to connect with his engineers and work out proper setups and hook up a lap properly to push through to those final stages of Q3. And it was a very disappointing quali for him. And then Leclerc, while he did get into Q3, only 10th in the end in Q3. So all in all, very underwhelming qualifying for Ferrari. The race was not too different. Leclerc at the start managed to pit past Norris. Mm-hmm. Norris eventually with natural just raw car pace was able to push back ahead of Leclerc. Yeah. And then it was sort of a fairly desperate attempt from Ferrari to try and push those kind of six or so cars ahead of them, whether it be swapping the cars to try and see if Lewis had a tire advantage, letting Lewis go ahead and try and catch that DRS train of Lawson, Tsunoda and Lando. Eventually it didn't work. And then at the end, there was a very sort of confusing case where Hamilton, I don't know if you saw this, Hamilton went to slow down right at the end of the race to let Leclerc past, but didn't do it enough. And Leclerc only just missed passing Hamilton. And so they ended up finishing Hamilton first and Leclerc second in that. When he was communicated to slow down for Leclerc, he did it too late or intentionally didn't do it too late. It's fairly unclear. But all in all, I know Leclerc came out after saying, you know, we finished 8th and 9th. You know, I'm not going to fuss about swapping cars around. I think that would be short-sighted and fairly, insensitive to what the team should have been doing, which was fighting for podium. So all in all, yeah, another weekend to forget for the prancing horse.
Tough time to be a Ferrari fan. If you just get into F1 and then you decide you're going to be a Ferrari fan, like, you better be a glutton for punishment at this point.
Yeah, it's not easy. And it's a tricky one with Ferrari at the moment. You know, they've had previous cases of Binotto underperforming, Arrivabene underperforming. It seems like there's a certain time period where the team principals just sort of lose their ability. I think when Vasseur came in, obviously got Lewis in, it was seen as this amazing move for Ferrari and they were back and there was this sort of almost like godfather feeling about the team. You know, it was this amazing heritage coming through and possibly race wins, championships. And now we're back at square one with Ferrari, you know, scratching their heads, us questioning the drivers, Vasseur. I don't know where they go from here, but let's see what happens in 26. I think if their engine is anything close to being competitive, then hopefully their kind of aero element can start to make a difference. But yeah, I mean, it's not looking good, and I don't think the long term is too positive.
Yeah, if their engine isn't competitive, they can always become a customer team to Mercedes.
Well, it seems like everyone is, you know.
It's no longer be Formula One. It's gonna be Formula Mercedes.
Well, yeah, they've accidentally fallen into a spec engine series because they're just Mercedes is too good. I mean, how many teams now for next year have a Mercedes engine?
I believe it's over
half. Surely,
I think it's half the grid. Because it's currently Aston Martin, but Aston Martin is going to be Honda next year. So it's going to be Alpine, McLaren, Williams, Mercedes. That might be it. It might be four.
Because Williams, Cadillac. Williams?
It's Mercedes, Alpine, McLaren, Williams. And then Ferrari is Ferrari, Haas, and Cadillac. Yes. And Audi, or is Audi developing their own? I forget all this.
Audi are developing their own. So, I mean, yeah, we'll wait and see Red what Bull, happens with that.
Red Bull and Racing Bull is developing their own with a partnership with Ford, Ford and Red Bull Powertrains.
And I think that yes. It'll be interesting, especially because, I mean, this is going to maybe a different point, but I think the whole point here is Mercedes have years and years of engine dominance in the bank. They've obviously got Brixworth as a dedicated engine facility. They've got so many customers that they're just raking in millions from. You've yeah. then got the sort of question marks around Red Bull and RB with Ford. I think everyone's sort of agreeing that that won't be necessarily fruitful in the first few years just by mm-hmm. the nature of a new partnership.
Yeah.
Audi, of course, building a new engine. I mean, we saw what happened with Honda back in 2015, I think it was right. when McLaren brought them on. It was, you know, really not good. And then it goes to Ferrari, and that's always the question mark we're asking. I mean, they are the only real rival to Mercedes in terms of that engine battle. So
yep.
up to you, Ferrari. Please give us yeah. a good championship.
Por favor, or whatever, please, and prego. What is please in Italian?
I think it's per favore.
Per favore.
I could be completely wrong. I could be wrong.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Speaking of Italian, let's talk about the team. It is per favore. Speaking of Italian, let's talk about the team from Faenza, aka Racing Bulls. Double yeah. points for Racing Bulls. Solid weekend for them, especially with Liam Lawson qualifying P3, finishing P5. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome weekend all round. Double points finish. Best career finish for Lawson. I think they're really pushing into that midfield battle and taking it to Williams and being almost the dominant force most weekends. I know I put, and this is in no way claiming that my prediction is right. I think we can both agree predictions went out the window for this race. Yeah. But I put Hadjar fifth, I think, purely just because Racing Bulls seem like a very solid midfield team. And they're right. the ones that are there to capitalize on other teams slipping up. Mm-hmm. And this was a great example of that. Obviously, Hadjar not as much in the picture, managed to finish 10th, fairly far yeah. off the Ferraris. He wasn't necessarily in the fight. But Lawson, brilliant weekend. I think Lawson has needed to bounce back. He's still behind Hadjar in the points. But I know I said last week that I think he may not have a seat next year. That was definitely a performance to prove me wrong. But yeah, incredible, incredible finish from him. And I think, on the podium.
Right. Yeah, almost on the podium. I think the fact that Yuki has been here for a while, he's had his chance. I think that is an argument to keep Lawson in that seat as opposed to Tsunoda, because Lawson's so much younger. And, we don't know what Liam Lawson's ceiling is yet. But I think after so many years in Formula One, we might have an idea of what Yuki's ceiling is and what he's capable of. In a Formula One car. But what I thought was so interesting with this race in Baku is you essentially had a physical representation of two drivers. You had Lawson in P5, Yuki in P6, who are both racing. They were both racing for their future in F1 right next to each other in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you kind of saw them all fighting for it. I know, obviously, in the commentary for those listening to the same commentaries, I am Harry Benjamin referencing many times about that exact point, saying about how these guys are wheel to wheel throughout the race, essentially for their future, essentially yep. for who's going to be in the sport next season. Of course, there are enough spaces for all three of them, as there currently are. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there is, as we discussed last time, Lindblad in the wings waiting. And we know yep. if there's a driver that's maybe not performing, Marco is quite quick to make decisions, and we could see Lindblad coming quite quickly, probably not this season, of course, but into next season. So yeah, it was a great representation on site at the race to see those two guys fighting. And to be fair, I mean, it was almost a weird situation where both of them won in the end. I mean, Lawson had a brilliant performance, obviously outperformed Yuki, but I think this was the weekend finally where we've seen Yuki deliver points, have a reasonable finish. I mean, I think I heard during the broadcast that Yuki is the lowest scoring driver for any full-time driver this year, ahead of Baku at least, in terms of those points scored.
Wow.
Which is quite a scathing statistic. And so I think for him, it was exactly what he needed to do to get that points finish. And it was exactly what Lawson needed to do to prove that he is worthy and can actually deliver as a rookie at the junior team. And then obviously Hadjar's doing amazing things anyway.
This is me armchair quarterbacking this. And of course, I know very little about motorsports. So what do I know by making this statement? But I'm looking at the Formula 2 standings. And Arvid Lindblad is currently sitting seventh in the Formula 2 standings with 109 points. Behind Jack Crawford in second with 169. And Fornaroli in first with 188. If Arvid Lindblad was leading in the Formula 2 standings or in contention to win the Formula 2 championship, I'd be like, put him in the seat now. But it might make a lot of sense, especially next year, because there's going to be growing pains with the new regulations. People are still figuring out their car. You might want an experienced driver who can give good feedback on said car. It might make sense for Red Bull to keep both Yuki and Lawson. Promote Hadjar to Red Bull, bring Yuki back to Racing Bulls, have Yuki and Lawson at Racing Bulls, and give Lindblad one more season in F2
before promoting him. It's a smart shout, to be honest. I think, as you said there, like when you're going into a regulation cycle, you want as many things to be consistent and reliable as you can. In terms of the car, in terms of the engines, those will all be new and the teams will be scrambling to try and work out the best possible format there. So you want drivers that you know and drivers that you can rely on, that know the setup, know exactly how to approach the car, know the employees around them, know the radio engineers, everything. And so it is definitely a gamble to chuck in a rookie for that season. What they could do is possibly have him as a reserve driver for the year, have him in all the debrief sessions, simulator sessions, get him fully equipped with the team so that he can jump in the year after and is basically hit the ground running. But with that situation, you could replay a Piastri Alpine year, which obviously don't want to replicate, where another team just come in and steal your reserve driver because you haven't promoted them soon enough.
But also, when you're that young, I feel like you should be getting reps. I feel like you should still be racing, in my opinion. I mean, I'm curious, seeing that Felipe Drugovich is now going to Formula E, correct?
Yeah.
He hasn't raced a full season since like 2022. Like, how rusty do you think he is?
It's interesting. It's definitely a tricky thing to look at. I mean, the thing I find, it depends on the driver, depends on their pedigree, how good they are at just switching back on. I mean, Piastri was out for a year before he took the move to McLaren. Obviously, we've seen how quickly he's adapted to that car and to that team. Right. And so I think you can jump in and just be back on it. I mean, I think these guys have been racing for pretty much their whole lives anyway. Right. I think it's almost like muscle memory for them. They can just jump in and deliver pretty much. Some, I'm sure, are different than others. Some need that constant feel behind the wheel and constant racing. And of course, well, based on this season, it looks like Lindblad won't win the F2 championship. So he can stay another year. Of course, if you win the championship, you then have to move on to something else. So I think he's in a decent position. He's able to have the cards in his hand, but if I was Red Bull, I'd think about the various options you have, holding him off for another year or keeping the other guys safe and in RB and Red Bull. It's all up to them, and I'll be very intrigued to see what they go with.
Also, when it comes to like publicity and marketing, Yuki and Lawson together are very good. They're very funny together. All the Kardashian sounds that they lip sync to at the beginning of the season were hilarious. But that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening to the WTF1 podcast. We will be back next week with a preview of the Singapore Grand Prix, which will be a night race. But before we go, anything else you want to say, Luke?
Nothing from me. Excited to look forward to Singapore and yeah, see if Max can push for a championship fight and do what Raikkonen did against the McLarens back in, 2007, I think, when he pipped them both. So don't think it's going to happen, but let's see.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.